The doctrine of discovery is the current system of laws and policies that justify the removal of land from indigenous peoples. These laws are rooted in church doctrines that originated in the 15th century.
Together, we will uncover this deep structure of colonization that systematically deprives indigenous peoples of human rights.
I'm Sherry Hostetler, and I helped start a coalition of Anabaptist people of faith that seek to dismantle the doctrine of discovery. I'm also a Mennonite pastor in San Francisco.
And I'm Sarah Augustine, and I also helped start this coalition. As an activist and scholar, I'm the descendant of the Tewa people and a displaced person. This is the Dismantling the Doctrine of Discovery podcast.
In this episode, we talk with Caitlin Curtis, author, poet, storyteller, public speaker, and an enrolled citizen of the Potawatomi Nation. Her most recent book is Living Resistance, an Indigenous Vision for Seeking Wholeness Every Day. She also authored the 2020 award-winning book, Native, Identity, Belonging, and Rediscovering God. And Caitlin, I think you also have a children's book coming out, right?
I do. Yeah, it comes out on Halloween, and it's a winter book, so it'll be out in time for the holidays. Yes, I'm so
That's great. It's called Winter's Gifts, correct?
Winter's Gifts, yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Well, welcome, Caitlin.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you both.
Caitlin, you structured your newest book, Living Resistance, around realms of resistance, which you name as the personal realm, the communal realm, the ancestral realm, and the integral realm. How did the realms of resistance framework come to you? Is there a specific story behind it?
Yeah. You know, I like my books to have some sort of like framework I can follow. Like Native was focused around our Anishinaabe flood story with Muskrat and Turtle and Original Man. And for this new book, I wanted it to have some sort of framework, but I wanted it to be a cyclical one and not a linear one, because I wanted to challenge that way that we often think. And I wanted it to be like a picture, like something that we could, like, you could hang on your wall or take with you somewhere. And so I was really excited that we were able to put it on the cover of the book, which I absolutely love. And it's loosely based on, you know, the medicine wheel, which many of us follow. It's the same idea in that it's a, you know, it focuses on different seasons of our life, the seasons of Mother Earth, you know, it has four, you know, it's focused on these different aspects of what it means to be human. But instead of doing, you know, one circle, I wanted it to be sort of these overlapping spaces. And then I ended up calling them the four realms of resistance, and they represent the four seasons. So you have, you know, winter, spring, summer, autumn. They represent different aspects of Mother Earth and different ways that we connect with our own bodies and with each other. And I was just so excited to create it. I struggled with how it was coming together because I'm not an artist. And I remember one day my kids were virtual for a while for school. And the day they went back to school, I, you know, that morning went to my kitchen table because I was like, I have to get the realms in my head. Like I have to have a visual if I'm going to keep writing this book the way I want to write it. And so I took like my dinner plates and I taped a bunch of paper together and I traced my dinner plates and made like a Venn diagram design. And then I was like, okay. And they have to have colors to them because that would help. And then they have to have seasons to them. That would help. And it all just like showed up right there. And I knew sort of the names of the realms, but I didn't have the integral one, that name yet. I was like, integration, like everything's coming together, the time of harvest, the time of autumn. And then it all just like appeared and I was so excited and it just helped me, you know, it was just one of those moments where I was stuck, I think. And it helped me figure out sort of what to do with the rest of the book. And then Alana Jewell, who is an Indigenous artist who did the cover, we gave her a bit of a description of the book and then she just showed up with this gorgeous cover and it just meant the world to me. And so the realms are not linear. They're meant to be, we live in the personal space of self-love and embodiment. We live in the the communal space of kinship and solidarity. We live in this, the ancestral realm is like all about liminality and our ancestors and who are we now and who are we going to be? And then the integration, like I mentioned earlier, is like this time of thinking about prayer and dreaming and sort of what is our life? Like, who are we for our whole life? And yeah, so far people have responded really well to it. And I feel like I've responded well. It's given me a framework for my own life, which I'm really grateful for. And I hope that it allows the book to be more expansive for people and to challenge the linear ways that we often live and even think about things like resistance and too much of a linear way or like a checklist, right? Instead of what if we just embody these different seasons in our lives? And I hope that that comes through when people read it.
Your reference to the medicine wheel, and one of the things that's been really important, I think, in my life and in my work is thinking about time as a cycle instead of a line. Mm. And I won't go into that at the moment, but I mean, it's something that I think about a lot, time as a cycle. And so I appreciate what you're saying about these, you know, the realms and that are not linear. And I would like for you, I wonder if you'd be willing to talk more about resistance. How does resistance play into this? Because, you know, of course, Sherry and I and the coalition that we established together, that's kind of the focus of what we're what we're interested in is resistance. And so I wonder if you could talk more about, you know, why choose in laying this out and talking about it, why is resistance important?
Yeah. Well, I always joke about how I like focus my books on these like terribly hot topics. Like, I'm like, why not? Let's talk about decolonization and resistance and activism, like all these words that are so, you know, how words become these like big things to talk about in society. And the scary part of that is that sometimes they lose their depth and meaning. We can ruin them sometimes. And so, you know, I think about the raised fist, this symbol of resistance, and it is that. It is the power of the people, and it's the power of solidarity and coming together. But I was like, what if resistance has other facets to it? What if it's not just that pushing or the scientific way of thinking of it? And so sort of the loose definition I give to it is that resistance is how we use our everyday energy against the dangerous status quo of our time. So we are exerting some sort of energy against a dangerous status quo. Maybe that status quo is that we don't know how to love ourselves. And so that's a personal resistance, right? Maybe it's that we don't know how to love each other. That's the communal part of resistance. Maybe it's that we don't know how to love Mother Earth. That's kind of the whole book, but that's a huge part of every realm. Maybe we don't know how to face history. And so our resistance is like naming where we are right now in this moment in time and for future generations. And then maybe resistance is redefining what prayer is to us, or, you know, and like things like that. So I wanted even the cover of the book to feel like soft and invitational, because I wanted it to surprise people, because we think of resistance maybe as more harsh, like imagery, right? And so what if it was like something a little softer that is invitational and surprises us, but still has so much depth and richness to it? And that's what I was trying to do, is just help us see it differently, but see it for what it is. And that our ways of self-love, our ways of, you know, I struggle with anxiety. So part of my personal resistance in this world is managing that in the work I do and showing up to the world, how I'm able to show up, you know, things like that. And I wanted it to be reflected in, again, those cycles, that our resistance is seasonal and that we may overlap these realms. Like, we live in all of them all the time. It's not that we're jumping from one to the next. And you're right, time itself is not just linear, it's cyclical. And that's so beautiful. So I hope that people feel that they feel the permission to stretch this idea of resistance and really ask what it means for their lives, because it's not like a copy and paste to everyone. Like, we have to come at it from different angles because we live different lives, but it matters for all of us, right? So that's That's what I was trying to do. And I hope people feel that.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think that's a great segue into the question I wanted to ask you, but I wondered if you could read a section from your book. Yeah. I'm actually putting it also in the chat if you want to read from that, or you can read.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah. And then if you could read that, and then I'll follow up with a question.
Okay. I believe that at the core of the human soul, we are called to be liberators and resistors. We are called to fight systems of oppression that make life harder for our human and non-human kin. Some of us lose our path along the way and knowingly or unknowingly uphold the status quo of empire, only to meander our way back again. But there are also those who spend their entire lives doing the hard and beautiful work of wholeness making in this world. This is not a shallow book on hobby resistance that requires little from us, yet gives us the chance to say that we resisted something. This book is a call deeper in and also forward, toward liberation. And if we let it, this movement toward liberation will become the very rhythm of our lives. In an era in which activism and resistance are tokenized hot topics, I want to restore these ideas as a basic human calling, one that each of us lives into every day that we fight for love.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I love that because, I think you're talking about what does it mean to just really deeply embody that calling as opposed to just have it be like this thing out there that I will say a lot of white people like kind of virtue signal around often.
Yeah.
And, you know, we founded the Coalition to Dismantle the Doctrine of Discovery because we wanted to call people of faith to be these lifelong activists and resistors. Uh-huh. And, you know, we're about systems change, about changing these laws and policies and paradigms and engaging the church in Indigenous people's movements. But many people of faith do not see themselves as activists or resistance fighters. I don't like that word. There's a better one, but anyways, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think they see activism and resistance as a spiritual gift they don't possess.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, can you say a little bit more about how you believe all of us are called to be activists and resistors? I actually feel like you've already been doing that, but maybe just say even a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, that was part of my struggle with framing the book is that it's hard to hold that liminal space of, I'm not saying that everyone can just be like, I'm an activist in the way that, for example, like grassroots activism has been doing incredible work over the years. I don't want to like just equate everyone with that. You know what I mean? But at the same time, there is this fear that we have almost, and I think it's a pressure that's put on a lot of people to begin unlearning or to just, for example, with Indigenous folks, like begin unlearning history, begin doing the work, read the books, like, you know, begin these conversations, stand with us for the rights of Mother Earth and for Indigenous rights. And I think people may start that journey and then they get really scared or they mess up. And then they're like, I can't do this. I'm not built for this. And I think that, unfortunately, sometimes in the society that we have today, there's just so much pressure that when you start that journey of being a part of the resistance, in whatever way that is, if you mess up, you're out, or if you don't do it the right way, or we are like, we got to go, go, go. We have to fix all the problems. And then we end up making things worse or we burn out and it's like, we're done. And I want us to try to like find a way to reframe that what if our resistance, our activism can be this slow, steady burn throughout our lives that we sustain together. And the power of it is that it is the micro work and the macro that was my other struggle. Is it work we do inside of ourselves that ripples out of our being that we get to change and that changes society? Or is it that the change happens on the macro, on the societal level, and then that changes us? And it's both. I think it has to be both. I think it has to be everything in between, because we know that people change through the power of storytelling and relationship on the personal level through unlearning, doing that work. And we know that societal change, protests and movements and, you know, fighting against unjust laws and systems, that work also matters. So I have so many parts of this book where I'm trying to hold that liminal space of it's both, it's both. Can it be both? It has to be both. And so to say, yes, we all hold that power of being activists, of holding solidarity and care for each other and Mother Earth. And we can do that work while acknowledging the people on the ground, the people who have been doing this work for a long time, and joining them, you know, and also making it a sustainable kind of work. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that, Caitlin. And I, you know, I'm just thinking as you're talking about how, you know, we've been working together now in coalition, Sherry and I, for, I guess it's a decade, is it, Sherry?
Yes.
And I'm thinking about how we have really discovered that you can't change laws and policies without changing the culture, and you can't change the culture without changing laws and policies. So we're like, okay, everything at once, you know, you know, there's this invitation. It's like, we're inviting people to bring your gifts, whatever they are. And there is no, like, here's the 5-step plan. You know what I mean? Like, there is, it's going to take all of us together and over generations of time. And so, you know, we have a team that's just dedicated to prayer, that's praying for the movement and for all of us in the coalition and for Indigenous peoples. And we have a team that is writing music, and we have a team that is, I mean, it's interesting. We have a team that's just started. It's kind of relevant to my next question to you, but we have another team that's just dreaming. And I don't mean like dreaming big, like hoping. I mean, talking about our dreams and working together to work through the dream space. And the interesting thing about that group, which is so incredible to me and such a gift to me, is that, you know, it's made up of people who are struggling with disabilities. So they're in transition. We are in transition as our bodies are changing and we're able to do less and less. And so for me, I call that the transition from, you know, the transition inward, you know, and beginning that work of, well, I mean, in many respects, I think it's elder work, which is dreaming and praying and working within in a different realm. And so I wanted to ask you a question about that, related to that. And, you know, those people are curious, or if you're struggling with a disability and you're interested in connecting with us, you can find us through our website, dismantlediscovery.org. But because to me, this is like a huge gift to me, is being able to sit in prayer and actually dedicated, committed co-discernment, you know, as we're making that journey inward. Anyway, here's my question. The integral realm is the last realm mentioned in your book, and you cover topics such as dreaming and the importance of visions. Can you touch on these a little more? I ask this because we also decided to include some of my visions in our new book, and Sherry included her beautiful poetry. As I say in the preface to our book, for me, this book is about vision. We must have the courage to imagine together a way of living consistent with reality, a way of being that is more than the way we live now. Could you say a bit more about this integral realm and the importance of visions and dreams?
Yes. First of all, why did I choose the word integral? Is like the hardest word to say ever. And as soon as I wrote it down, I was like, I'm going to regret this. Come on. I was like, I'm just going to say the word integration a lot. Like, integration. Anyway, I love that you told me more about what you all are doing, because just you describing that to me felt and sounded so like liberatory, like this beautiful power. There's so much power of going inward, and the elders space and that space of dreaming is so powerful. And I love that those were included in the new book, because we need both. Like, we need the grounding, we need the facts, we need the data, we need, you know, we need those things. And I talk about this a lot in the you know, climate justice world that we have the science, we have these things, but what about like just the hope of our relationship with Mother Earth? What about this beautiful connection of kinship that we are trying to repair with her that's based in an actual relationship? Like, we're missing that in our climate conversations a lot of the time, which means that we're missing a huge chunk of the importance of this moment. And what you're talking about is just really beautiful, to make sure that we are paying attention to the dream world, the vision world, the prayer world. And I didn't fully know what to put into the integral realm, because, you know, when you come to that last realm, even though they're not linear, I still wanted to try to tie it in to say, like, that realm is autumn. Autumn's my favorite season. Autumn is the time of harvest. It's like, it's the gathering in time. It's the release time of letting some things die and other things gathering in. It's the time to focus on our shkode or our fire. And that's such a beautiful, bright, powerful thing. Like, what's at the center of who we are? And so I thought, I have redefined prayer for myself so many times in my life, and I still am. And it's a very mystical thing that I'm not sure what it is still sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the power of dreaming, it just can't be understated. And I think in our society, again, like the way we learn in a linear way, we are not well-versed in this beautiful world that we hold. And so, you know, hearing you talk about how you're actually like purposefully stepping into those spaces is like, that's a form of embodiment. That's a form of resistance in a very colonized world. And I find that to be so beautiful, and it encourages me and makes me really happy that I wrote about those things at the end of the book, because I write about how, like, what if prayer is, in a very domestic sense, because I love home. What if prayer is the way that I decorate my home for the different seasons, or the way that I do my dishes in a meditative state, and I'm thinking about my body and myself and my mind and the people who are struggling in the world, and I'm maybe crying while I'm doing the dishes? Like, can that be a form of prayer? Can prayer be something else too? You know, can our dreams really like change things? And I think that there is just this beautiful, beautiful power of embodiment when our bodies are in liminal space. Like, literally, if it's that we're sleeping and dreaming, that's a liminal space. Literally, the space we inhabit right now between those who came before us and those come after us, like, that is, we're embodying this liminal era right now of our lifetime. And we're passing something on to those who come after, whatever that may be. There's so much beauty in that liminal space of, we know the world we have right now, but what's the one that we want? What's the one that we hope for and dream for? And I love that you shared that. And I encourage anyone to ask those questions. What is your dream space? What visions are you holding that are buried deep inside of you? What are coming up into your mind and into your heart when you least expect it? And what does prayer feel like? What does it feel like and look like for you? I hope that people will ask those questions in the realm that they are in through the work of resistance.
Well, one of the things I wanted to share with you, just kind of based on what you just said, Caitlin, is that these Diné women who have had the patience to sit with me talk about setting up a loom when they're threading a loom or warping that loom. They're doing that in a prayerful way because you want to make sure that that your intention is going into that product. So that process of, it's a tedious task. I'm a weaver myself. That process of threading or warping a loom is a prayerful process. And this weekend, I was in Oregon and I had the privilege of watching a video that was made by the Nez Perce people. The chairman of the Nez Perce Prize tribe was there to show it in Idaho. And anyway, an elder in that film was talking about repairing the nets, which is also a prayerful task. So he's there repairing the net and talking about stating his intention in a prayerful way as he's stringing and repairing his nets for fishing nets. And then I was also thinking about how my own mentors, Tewa elders, have taught me when I'm preparing to dream, to really set up, you know, I take water from my homeland and set it up with intention, stating my intention before I go to sleep, knowing that I'm opening up to that, that space. And I want to state my intention because I want to really be clear about not what I want to dream about. I don't know how to explain that. I can't explain it. I want to be clear about what I'm holding going into that space and then be really open about what I'm going to receive in that space. Yeah. When I'm a beginner, you know, like I'm not some, you know, guru or something that knows how to do all this stuff. But I was just wanting to respond to that and say, you know, something that I love from the person who wrote, I'm looking at my bookshelf because I'm gonna have to say this person's name in here. Oh dear, this Episcopal priest who wrote the Four Vision Quests of Jesus.
Oh yeah, Stephen Charleston.
Stephen Charleston.
Yeah, Stephen.
Really was the person who sort of enabled me to really start talking openly about, you know, the dreams and visions I've been having since I was really 8 years old is when I had the first one. And to say, hey, this is for everyone. This isn't for, you know, the select few. And it shouldn't be embarrassing to talk about it because when we do it together, when we're dreaming together, you know, and I'm setting my intention, dreaming with these other people who are in this working group, we're dreaming together and starting to notice that our dreams are aligning. That through that process, you know, we are collectively discerning something that is bigger than anything we could be alone. And so that's it, you know, it's necessary to sort of state that, to be willing to talk about it. And then the last thing I want to say, sorry, I'm just coming up with all these examples. In the Yakima tradition among women there, they've talked about, you know, doing the dishes is a prayerful act and stating your intention as you're praying. And also as you're preparing food, you have to put your prayer into that food because you could harm someone otherwise. I mean, you can't like be banging around and irritated when you're preparing food because your energy is going into that food. And food preparation is a prayerful act. And so anyway,
But what you're stating is that the power and beauty of Indigenous wisdom that so many Indigenous peoples all over the world have been carrying for generations is the that power of gratitude and care and the power of kinship and reciprocity with Mother Earth, with the creatures around us, with each other, and that power of prayerful mindfulness, like living with the world around you. And that's so powerful. And I think people are hungry to try to understand that, to try to find those kinds of ways of being in the world. And I think that Indigenous peoples have such a beautiful gift to give to so many and sharing the wisdom of that. So I'm so glad that you named some of those examples and shared that, because I think it's important for people to know that those weren't just things that we did a long time ago. Like this is the ongoing way that we resist colonization, that we exist and thrive and stay connected to ourselves and each other and Mother Earth. So I love that you shared those.
Everywhere we look, we see signs that all is not right with our Earth. Extreme temperatures and weather patterns wreak havoc. Pollutants sour soils, waterways, and our very bodies, and fires and floods ravage land and communities. We believe climate change is just a symptom of a larger ecological crisis. If we want change, we must realize that the solutions to the problems we face can't come through the same systems that created those problems in the first place.
Ecological justice requires that we challenge our assumptions about creation and our relationship to it. It requires decolonization. We must turn to the leadership of Indigenous communities who struggle for all life as land and water protectors. And we are calling on people of faith to join them.
We believe this so strongly, we wrote a book about it. It's called So That We and Our Children May Live, Following Jesus and Confronting the Climate Crisis. And it's published by Herald Press.
This book offers hope for a better future alongside concrete actions for joining with Indigenous peoples to protect life and negotiate with decision makers for sustainable change that follows Jesus. In these pages, we invite you with us to confront climate change and choose life for our children and the future of our planet.
We invite you to buy our book and join the conversation. Thank you. I also just want to say how much I really love this conversation we've been having about vision, dreaming, integral realm. I also was, I've been, the Christian contemplative tradition has been really important to me. And I'm seeing some of these threads of alliance, like, there's this idea from Brother Lawrence called this, a kind of old book called Practicing the Presence of God. And like, when you're cutting up your potatoes for your, he was a monk, when you're cutting up your potatoes, that is prayer. That is, he doesn't emphasize as much the connection to Mother Earth, but he does talk about bringing this presence, and that is prayer, and that God is present, the Creator is present in that moment, in those potatoes, and in your interaction with the potatoes. And I think one of the things that, Caitlin, you talk about so much, and of course, Sarah, you do too, but I just love the way you talk about Mother Earth. I just feel your connection to Mother Earth, and then I feel my own connection to Mother Earth when I hear you talking. And I also love the way you link, that to that we are all called then to be land protectors, just like we would protect our own mother. We are land protect. I mean, our biological mothers or adopted mothers. So on page 94, you say it is not only the job or role of Indigenous people to care for the land. If you're a human being and you're reading this book, you have a relationship to Earth, whether you recognize it or not. And I think that's so important because I think so many white people feel pretty disconnected from Earth. And I think that was something that was taken away from them. And that is one of the sort of things that, so I really appreciate you naming that. And then a bit later in that same paragraph, you say, protecting the land as an act of resistance begins with the realization and acceptance that we belong to her, the land, and Indigenous folks mm-hmm. across the globe are leading the way in this work. So can you just say a little bit more about your belief that we are all called to be land protectors?
It is true. And sometimes when I'm traveling and speaking, or when I'm, when I'm writing, when I'm interacting with people, there's this sort of walking on eggshells of like, you do this work, but I could never. And I have plenty of trauma in my life. Like, I'm repairing my relationship to Mother Earth. Some Indigenous people don't like camping. Can you imagine? There are these stereotypes that people carry of like, we've all been always connected to Mother Earth. And we now Indigenous people have, as societies, as cultures, we have been connected to Mother Earth in a very critical way for a long time. But systems of colonization, of assimilation, of genocide have disrupted that connection in so many ways. So in my personal life, I write about how, as children, many of us have this really special, curious, carefree, beautiful connection with Mother Earth. And I felt that when I was young. And I remember as I got older, sort of just, I started coping with my trauma in other ways. I would watch TV. I would stay inside. I would go very inward. But it wasn't necessarily, I wasn't finding that through Mother Earth. Some families do that. They stay connected to Mother Earth. I know people who are not Indigenous who have grown up so connected to Mother Earth, my husband being one of them, like he helped me come back again, you know, and he's not Indigenous. He's a white guy who really deeply respects Mother Earth as the being that she is. And he helped me come back too. And so to name all these different ways that we find our way home to her is okay. To name that for a lot of us, it has been hard. And there are the systems of colonization that have built up around us and are still happening. A huge part of that, the role of colonization is to disrupt this relationship through capitalism, through consumerism. There's so many systems that are working so hard to tell us. Christianity as well. I mean, I grew up learning the Bible verses about how we, what's the word? Domination. That we have dominion. That was it. That was the last of it. Like, basically do whatever you want. You're human. We're at the top of everything. Do what you want. The afterlife is what matters. And so that's what I grew up with. And right. So learning this word kinship or learning, oh my gosh, there's such a depth to my own culture that we didn't talk about when I was younger because we didn't know how. And there's so much to gain. And I want everyone to feel that as an invitation that no matter who you are, there is this beautiful relationship to. And that's why I tell people to start writing love letters to Mother Earth, start a journal, like do it every morning if you need to, because part of it is actually just rewiring it in our brains that Mother Earth is not like an object. Mother Earth is a being. Mother Earth is someone I can have a relationship with, someone I do have a relationship with. That is a relationship worth restoring. That's one worth paying attention to. Like even that simple switch, I think will help a lot of people heal. It'll help them heal their relationship to their child selves. It'll help them find their way back to their own bodies again. It's helped me with, I mean, we started climbing, rock climbing as a family about a year and a half ago, and it has healed being outside, being by rocks, thanking them, speaking with them, spending that time together as a family has already healed me in so many ways. And healed aspects of my trauma and my fear that I was not expecting. And so I hope that people will hear that and invest in that relationship in any way that fits them. And it really is for all of us. Yeah. Because if only Indigenous people do it or everyone else is like, they do it, but we don't, that's not going to change the systems. We need the acts of solidarity to show us how we do it together, all voices being heard, right? That we're speaking up about it. Yeah. So I hope that people feel that invitation.
I want to say one more thing about that, which is, you know, just so much processing. Gosh, Sarah, give us a break. I can't help it. I think about how the people of Earth, which is all of us, have a history in Earth-based spirituality, every single person, every single people. Yeah. And the process of empire and colonization, yes, has stripped that from so many. And so I think Indigenous peoples, there's more than, you know, there's all this diversity of Indigenous peoples around the globe, have hung on to that. But that's not kind of secret sauce that is only for Indigenous peoples, which is why I so appreciate this idea that vision is for everyone. You know, a relationship with our mother is, yeah, for everyone. A true relationship with creation is for everyone. And our ancestors knew that, no matter who you are. And so I think that, yes, one of the challenges of whiteness, from my point of view, is that the whiteness is a kind of erasure. It's erasing this whole ancestral past, yes, and globbing everybody into a big glob. And don't get me wrong, there are people who benefit from whiteness, you know, especially here at the core of the empire's core. Sure. There are benefits for being white, if you can claim whiteness, but these processes of right, these processes of colonization harm everyone, and are oppressive to everyone. And so hear me, listeners. This does not mean that I'm encouraging you to go talk about and seek out how you're a victim, because that's not useful necessarily. We're calling you into
yes.
the work.
Yes.
Because it's going to take all of us to change the paradigm that is killing us all. It's killing yeah. us, and it's killing the systems of life that we depend on
yeah.
to live. Anyway, yeah. so thank you, Caitlin. Sorry to be like all blah, blah, blah.
I go on a little Instagram rant.
I don't know why I do that, but anyway.
Perfect.
Take That's us home, Sherry.
No. It's a perfect, I think, ending to this interview of just the call. I mean, it's calling us directly into the center of the work, which is to, I love that, re-engaging with Mother Earth, because we have to engage, we have to have that relationship, and we have to be protecting the land, the air, the water, mm-hmm. because we are That's dying. Okay. We will die if we do not do this. And we are. And we're seeing that with climate change. This mm-hmm. is the very center mm-hmm. of the work. So thank you. It's been a blessing mm-hmm. to be in this conversation with both of you and all three of us. And listeners, we hope this conversation is a blessing and a way, and just to provide some steps forward for you in your own pathway on this journey of resistance.
Thank you, sister. So glad to be with you.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool, because it's like, yeah, I get to love on you, but also kind of a fangirl. Thank you for being here with us, Caitlin.
Oh, I'm so grateful for both of you. I'm so grateful for the books that you write and the visions you hold and the way that you are caring for this work, even through engaging with these listeners. So I'm so grateful for both of you. I'm so glad to be here with you.
This podcast is hosted by us, co-produced by the DD of D Coalition and Anabaptist World.
The opinions expressed here are ours, however, and do not reflect official positions of Anabaptist World.
For more information, go to anabaptistworld.org and dofdmeno.org.
Our theme music is by Micah Peplow and Shannon Kaler. Thank you.